We're on Pei Beis, Omid Beis, continuing the sugya of the various dinim that are unique to Yerushalayim. We're about 15 lines down. And the first of those 10 dinim was Ein Habayis Cholut Ba, that even though with regard to a walled city, a Ir Mukefes Choma, the halacha is that the buyer has rights to maintain his ownership on the karka that was sold in that city once the 12-month period since the sale has passed, which means that if the mocher did not exploit his opportunity to redeem the field within 12 months, once that 12-month period since the mechira passed, the karka or the bayis is cholut biyad hakona, which means it's absolutely his, the buyer. He has permanent ownership over that house, and no longer does the mocher have a right to force the lokeach to give back the field by paying the pidyon and being goel his sadeh. The right of the mocher terminates with the passage of 12 months, and now the word cholut here implies that in an ir mukefes choma, the purchase of this house by the buyer is cholut. Now, in the case of Yerushalayim, despite the fact that it is a walled city, the din of cholut biyad hakone does not apply, which means that the seller retains his rights even beyond the 12 months to redeem the field and get the field back. And this is derived by the sugi here from the pasuk in Vayikra Chaf Hey, the ish ki yimkar base moshav ir choma. And then the rest of the pasuk, let's just get out the pasuk here. Just one second, sorry. Ahoisa gulaso atom shnas mimkoro yomim tia gulaso vimlo yigal ad malos lo shona tmima vikom habayis. Those are the key two words. Vikom habayis. This is in a case of bate arichoma. Vikom habayis means that now the kinyan of the lokeach, of the buyer, is absolute, irreversible, and eternal. Vekoma bayis asher bi'ira shelo choma litzmisus. That means cholut. Lekono solidarosov lo yetze biyovel. And even after Yovel comes around, the mocher still does not retrieve his sold property, his sold bayis. And why doesn't this apply to Yerushalayim? And the answer is, because v'kasavar, the Tana of our Braisa, is of the opinion that lo nischalka Yerushalayim lishvotim, that Yerushalayim was never divvied up as the rest of Eretz Yisrael was lishvotim, each shevet inheriting its portion in the land, but rather Yerushalayim remains in the bailus of Klal Yisrael. It's what we call a bailus of the tzibur, rather than the bailus of a yachid. Now, even though in Eretz Yisrael proper, outside of Yerushalayim, there is a concept of bailus hatzibur, but nevertheless, that bailus hatzibur has, the bailus, I should say, has another dimension to it. It's not only bailus hatzibur, it's also bailus hayachid. And the yachid, insofar as he's part of the tzibur, gets his kinyan prati on his land that was divvied out to him at the time of the Chalukas Haaretz, or inherited in generations to come. But Yerushalayim was not divvied up lishvatim, And this is a sugya in Masechta Yuma on Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph. There, the Gemara records a controversy between the Tanakama, who holds that Yishlaim lo nischalka l'shvatim, whereas Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and holds that Yishlaim was nischalka l'shvatim, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, the status of Karka and Yishlaim is identical to that of Eretz Yisrael, which allows the Mocher to sell the land in an absolute way such that the Lokeach acquires all the rights of possession and ownership. Masha Enkin, according to the Tanakama, Yushalayim lo nischalka l'shvatim, which means that all of Klal Yisrael have a shutvus as one entity, as one sibur in the land of Yushalayim. And this is derived by Chazal from the Pasuk in Dvarim Yud Beis, Mikol Shiftechem, which means that Yushalayim is described in that Pasuk as a shutvus of Klal Yisrael. And in fact, the Rambam Beis HaBechira in Perek Zayin paskins like the Tanakama, which means that at the time that they divide up the land, although they divide up Yerushalayim as well, they did not divide up in such a way that any particular Shevet would have private or exclusive ownership over it. And the reason why they probably went through the process of dividing Yerushalayim at the time of Chalukas so was because they didn't yet identify exactly where the Makom HaMikdash is. But what they did was, when they divided up Yerushalayim, the mindset, the Kavana was, that once there will be a Bechira, the Makom HaShe Yivcha Hashem of the Beis HaMikdash site, then there'll be a zchus of all Klal Yisrael. So since Yerushalayim lo nischalka l'shvatim, there's no way that the Mocher could claim that he has full bialus over the land of Yerushalayim, such that he could now do what we call a hakna, and the hakna would impact a kinyan of the kone of the lokeach in such a way that the kone now could claim Smitus, that means Nechlat Biyad HaKoneh. No, this din of Nechlat Biyad HaKoneh after 12 months would not apply, because since the Koneh never got that full-fledged right and ownership possession over the land, therefore the status of Yerushalayim vis-a-vis the halacha of being Podeh, being Goel the Sodeh, is that identical to that of the balance of Eretz Yisrael. So again, what we're saying is that this halacha of Nechlat Biyad HaKoneh after the 12-month period in the normal case of Ir Mukefes Choma is based on the zchus that the Koneh received from the Makneh, from the Mocher. In the case of Yerushalayim, since the Makneh, the Mocher, doesn't have that zchus, because again, he only has part and parcel of the shutvis of all Klal Yisrael, what we call the Bialus of the Tzibur. In that sense, he's no different than anyone who davens in a certain shul vis-a-vis the ownership of the Sefer Torah. The Sefer Torah, the shul, is owned equally by anyone in the shul. And Yerushalayim is owned equally by anyone in Yerushalayim. How could the Makneh sell rights that he doesn't have to guarantee that the Mocher has those rights? And therefore the Kinyan of this bias has the din of Hachlota Biyad HaLokeach. I'm sorry, this sale in Yerushalayim does not engender the hachlota, the schus hachlota of the lokeach. And the reason for that is because there's no bailus yochid in Yerushalayim. The karka belongs to all of Klal Yisrael, and therefore the makneh cannot give and bequeath to the lokeach that which he, the mocher, the makneh, doesn't have for himself. He doesn't have really any special absolute rights in the karka, or the mechubel karka in the case of a bais of Eretz Yisrael. Now, What did we want to discuss here? Oh, yeah. We should mention that there might be a difference here between bias and karka. Meaning, as far as karka is concerned in Yerushalayim, perhaps, you know, in the absence of any vestige or any element whatsoever of bialus of the yachid, there's no possibility of selling karka in Yerushalayim. But as far as the bias, which is only mechubal karka, it's not really gufa shel karka, it could be that the mechir itself is recognized. And again, the very premise of our braisa to say that the mocher has rights to be goyel the sada means that he sold the sada in the interim period until he exercises those rights and implements them. The sada clearly belongs to the lokeach. And when we say the sada here, I have to be very careful because as far as the sada is concerned, I don't know if there's mechira at all. But with regard to the bias itself, although it's mechubal karka, still lends itself to a mechira. But yet, it's not a full-fledged mechira that could bequeath to the lokeach absolute rights, meaning after Yud Beis Chodesh, of ownership on this bias. So, in other words, as far as the law of Geulas Batim, the bias in Yerushalayim has the same status as the karka, and it cannot be sold in a way that the lokeach would have an absolute right of being muchlat biyado, but rather the mocher can be goel that field. Next, we get to the din of number two in the list here of Eina, the Eina Mivia Egla Rufa. In other words, if a corpse is found between Yerushalayim and a nearby city, an adjoining city, and we don't know, we cannot identify the killer, then although outside of Yerushalayim, we would, in all the bounds of it, so we would undergo and implement the process of Arifas HaEgla, but not in the case of Yerushalayim. D'chsiv, ki motzei chol ba'adama, asher Hashem alakech nosein l'chol l'rishta. And it's obviously a piece of land that was given to Yerusha. The Torah goes out of its way to make that stipulation. And we know that in the case of Yerushalayim, lo nischalka l'shvatim, as we just saw earlier with regard to Bate Arichoma, here also, with regard to Egla Rufa, we consider it Yerushalayim as bailus hatzibur. It's not something that you can bequeath through Hakna, through Yerusha. And the reason for that is because Yerushalayim lo nischalka l'shvatim, there's no private ownership in the strict sense over Yerushalayim, ain't no private ownership. And therefore the Adama upon which the Torah commands us to implement the performance of Arifas HaEgla, that land cannot generate it unless it's Lirishta, unless it's Adama Lirishta. But Yerushalayim lo nischalka l'shvatim, therefore it's not Adama Lirishta, and therefore you cannot go through the process of Egla Rufa with regard to Yerushalayim. And here I want to mention that L'chora, the Gemara could have given a much simpler understanding as to why there's no Egla Rufa in Yerushalayim. And that is because the process of Egla Rufa requires what we call Medida. And it means we're trying to determine from which city the person who was slain and whose corpse we locate on the ground, which is the closest city, which is a Jewish city. Again, because what we're trying to figure out is which individual member of the Jewish nation was responsible for, again, not deliberately and directly, but for indirectly a situation that led, like a chadgadya, from one thing to the other. At the end of the chain of events, this man who was let go from the city was slain. And again, you need a medida from a city that's a Jewishly populated city. In the case of Yerushalayim, the Gemara could have invoked the same principle as the Gemara does in Bava Basra, that in the case of Yerushalayim, everybody came to the regel. We cannot identify, how many Jews are local citizens who have their domicile in Yerushalayim, because masses of Jews are coming for the regel, to bring karbonos on the regel, to be kind of the mitzvah of olah the regel. And therefore, it's impossible to do medida and figure out the real population of Yerushalayim, because there are always Jews flooding Yerushalayim. And not only that, there are goyim that come to do business in Yerushalayim, as the pasuk in Yechezkel Chavav indicates, Dalso Sa'amin. And therefore, we could substitute the Gemara's answer with a very sophisticated analysis of Glarufa requiring Adama L'Rishta, which is precluded according to the Tanakhama by the principle of Yerushalayim lo nischal kol shvat. There's another reason why there's no Egla Ruf from Yerushalayim, and that is we don't have a rov to establish that the corpse might possibly have come from Yerushalayim, because there are so many individuals that are just passing through Yerushalayim, and so many goyim that come to Yerushalayim. It was apparently a financial center at that time, and the sochrim of all the nations were pulled. There was a gravitational pull to Yerushalayim. Go figure out what the population of Yerushalayim is to come up with a rov. And therefore, we would have suspended the entire halacha of Egla Rufa with regard to Yerushalayim. But perhaps we could suggest, and this might be reflected in the Shita Mekubetzes, also in Tosfos Maskil Eino, I'll let you decide and you be the judge, that since there were places, locations in Yerushalayim where only the citizens of Yerushalayim, the Anshei Eir, used to populate and be found. And for example, the Gemara tells us that during the days of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, All of the Jewish nation lived in Yerushalayim, and there were very few Nachrim there in Yerushalayim. So we have a number of different scenarios which would lead us to the conclusion that it's very possible to do a medida that would determine the rov. And perhaps we can offer and suggest an alternative understanding of why there's no din of Egla Ruf in Yerushalayim, and that is because Egla Rufa requires what we call Karov, and Rov topples Karov, trumps Karov. And in the case of Rov, what we're going to say is that we go Basar Rov Ha'olim She'enom Anshe Yerushalayim, meaning those who come on Aliyah L'Regel, who are not members of Yerushalayim. We can't use Karov, which is the determining factor in Egla Rufa, because we have to consider Rov Ha'ir. Excuse me, not only Rov Ha'ir, but also the Rov Ha'ir, including the Olim, those who come on Aliyah during these periods of time to Yerushalayim. And Kol Yisrael, all of the Jewish nation, would converge on Yerushalayim during the regel period, and as a result, and plus there were Nachrim, as a result, it's impossible to use Rov. No. What I mean to say is that the Karov situation really is trumped by the Rov. The Rov now is more powerful than the corpse, because even if, let's say, the corpse would turn out to be closer to the adjacent city, but nevertheless the rov of the multitudes of people that come to Yerushalayim and converge there would override the korov.
and that messes up, flukes up, so to speak, the whole system of Egla Rufa, which is based on Medida, which is based on determining which is the corpse is closer to this city or to the other city. In any event, what I wanted to point out, and this is important, is that we're not necessarily undermining the entire parasha of Egla Rufa in this case. It's quite possible, and this has to be studied very carefully in the light of Sugis and Bav Basra and elsewhere, that in the case of Yerushalayim, we'll do a Medida between two other cities. And I think we've mentioned this in the past. So it's as if Yerushalayim didn't exist, even though the corpse may be closer to Yerushalayim. We didn't do a Medida because there is no din of Medida in terms of Yerushalayim. But we will fulfill the parasha of Egla Rufa in relationship to two other cities. And what we're going to determine is make believe Yerushalayim was not there. Let's look at the two closest cities proximate to the corpse, and we'll fulfill the entire kiyum, the parasha, and the system of Egla Rufa with regard to those two cities. Then we have the third din of Yerushalayim, namely Eina Naseis Ir Anidachas, that the parasha of Ir Anidachas, which means that if Rova the city were Oved Avodah Zarah, we destroy the city, that parasha doesn't apply to Yerushalayim. Dichsiv, because in the parasha of Ir Anidachas, the Torah says, and I quote the Pasuk in Devarim Yud Gimel, Ki Sishma Biachas Orecha Asher Ata Asher Hashem Elokecha Nosein Lecha Losheves Sham, and then it says Lemar, etc. So the parasha of Ir Anidachas requires Ircha. Ircha means that it is, so to speak, owned, or at least the members of the city can claim that they have ownership rights for yeshiva, but Yerushalayim lo nischalka l'shvatim, and that's not called ircha or irecha. That's not called private ownership. That's again a reflection of what we said over and over again, that the bailus of Yerushalayim is the bailus of the klal of Bnei Yisrael, the tzibur, as an entity. Now, what happens according to the Man Diomar that Yerushalayim nischalka l'shvatim? So here we have a chiddush from the Sifri. The Sifri claims in Dvarim Yud Gimel that there's another word in this pasuk that we quoted earlier that's critical, and that is l'sheves. What l'sheves means is an absolute yeshiva, an individual ownership that is unrestricted, meaning when I own something and I possess it, it's mine without any limitations. I can do whatever I want there. For example, I can eat whatever I want there. Again, bound by the laws of kashrus, obviously, but I can eat. Nobody could say, well, the way you eat and what you're allowed to eat is limited. Now, in the case of Yerushalayim, it's a little bit different, because the Sifri says that the halacha tells you specifically what you can eat in Yerushalayim and what you're obligated to eat in Yerushalayim. That itself is a kind of control, a diet control, a restriction. Namely, you have to eat kudshim in Yerushalayim, and that would apply even to a Yisrael, a non-kohen. In the case of Shalom, you have to be makpid in Yerushalayim on the mitzvah, the eating of Maaser Sheni, which lo sucha lecho b'shrecha, which can only be eaten in Yerushalayim. There are various restrictions that apply to the way you live in Yerushalayim. And there are mitzvahs that will, in a certain sense, impinge or restrict the way you live there. That's called afkos dira l'sheves. L'sheves means l'sheves in an unrestricted way. It's totally yours. It's 100% yours. Here, in the case of Yerushalayim, even if I hold this chalka l'shvatim, but there are mitzvos which limit the bialus, the individual bialus that a person have Yerushalayim. And we have here a special halacha in Ira Nidachas, according to the Sifri, that you need yeshiva, because the Torah says lasheves, and yeshiva means chusei tashmishim, that you can enjoy the benefits of this piece of the city, whatever it is. And that unlimited schus tashmishim does not apply in the case of Yerushalayim, because even if I hold in the schalkal shvatim, but nevertheless, there are certain laws that limit the way I live in Yerushalayim. I have certain chiyuvim and mitzvahs. That's the Sifri. Now we go on to number four. V'eino metama b'negoyim. The parsha of Nigei Batim in Vayikra Yedalid does not include Yerushalayim. There's an exclusion of Yerushalayim d'chsiv, because in that parasha it says, V'nasati negat saras bebeis eretz achuzaschem. And the word achuzaschem, again, is indicative of the fact that you have a total ownership, unrestricted. And in the case of Yerushalayim, what do you mean total ownership? Yerushalayim lo nischalka l'shvatim means it remains the bialus of all of Klal Yisrael. There's no bialus of the Yochid. You can't call it achuzaschem. It's my bias and I own it. And the nega is a message to me because I'm the owner of the bias. That doesn't apply in the case of Yerushalayim. So it's not achuzaschem, and therefore would be mafkia the entire parish of Tumas Nigei Batim with regard to Bate Yerushalayim. Then we get to number five on the list, Ein V'ein Motzien Ba Zizin Ugizus Teros. These are various projections of verandas that we said, or porches, and the Gemara now offers two answers, two alternative reasons as to why these porches should not be built in Yerushalayim. The first answer is Mipnei Oel Hatuma. Perhaps you will find underneath any one of these gusteros or zizim, mirpasos, and so forth, a kezayis mibosar mess. And in such a case, as a result of the merpeset, there is what we call ohel onto tumah, onto a kezayis basar min ames. That's reason number one. Again, we're talking about the fact that in Yerushalayim there is a ribuy of tumah, because again, many people, throngs of people, pour into the streets of Yerushalayim, and therefore when they walk underneath, therefore there's more of a possibility of a kezayis basar min ames, and as a result of these gusteros and zizin, there will be ohel ames if there's a kezayis basar min ames that fell close to this house. But the bias has a ziz, and therefore there's going to be an ol on the ziz. Now the Gemara gives another reason. Mishum delo litazku. Now, what do you mean litazku? Litazku means to damage, meaning that these projectiles, if you're not careful, they can, you know, you could walk into them or you could trip over them. But why does that have to do with Yerushalayim? And the answer is ole regolim. Masses of Jewish populations are converging on Yerushalayim for the mitzvah Aliyah L'Regel, and therefore the streets of Yerushalayim are absolutely overcrowded, and it's very possible that somebody will, you know, without thinking as meticulously as he should have and being as careful as he should have, he slams into one of these zizin or one of these mirpasos, and he trips and he falls, and who knows what happens to him. So let's avoid harmful boros, so to speak, harmful objects from Yerushalayim. In this case, We're talking about the possibility of, again, as we said before, somebody might trip and fall and harm himself as a result of the gustros that project into the public thoroughfare. Is there an afkamina between the two reasons? And the answer is a definite yes. In the case of zizim, if they're samuch lekarka, if they're almost on the ground, there's no possibility for it to be mahil ala tuma. But on the other hand, we have to worry about the fact that maybe over in Vishavim, amongst the various wayfarers, somebody might trip. So despite the fact that the ziz is very low down, and that again is going to prevent this halachic structure called lahayil ala tuma, because the ohel here is very, very, very short. It's low down on the ground. But nevertheless, as far as the other answer, the other explanation, namely shalolitazku ole regolim, that should apply even if it's low down, even if it is, even if it is so low down that there's no ola mes, but nevertheless shemi yitkalu bahem over vishav v'ena osim bahem ashpos. So again, once again, we're moving away from concepts like Yerushalayim lo nischalku l'shvatim, there's no bialus protis, as we said in Yerushalayim. We're moving on now from the case of zizin and gustros over to ashpos, to a different dimension of these dinim that apply to Yerushalayim. Not Yerushalayim as a makom which is lacking bialus hayochid because it's owned, in quotation marks, by the entire tzibur of Klal Yisrael, but rather a din of Kiddusha, the sanctity and the Tahara of Yerushalayim, and therefore we want to avoid any situations of Tuma Vitara which can be circumvented. Or, for example, Lolit Litazku, which we said before is an issue where the Oli Regalim are going to be damaged. This din really reflects the fact that Yerushalayim has to be a place, more than any other place, of protecting the people, in this case the wayfarers or those who walk on the roads, from any sort of hezek, any sort of harmful damage. And the reason for this is because Yerushalayim is the center, is the place where the Olei Regolim come and others gravitate to Yerushalayim. V'ein osim ba ashpotos mishum shkatzim. Again, we're trying to maintain the Kedush and Tara of Yerushalayim and protect it from any sort of attack of shrotzim, because these shrotzim are metame betuma sheretz. And that applies even to a dead sheretz. And therefore, what we have to worry about is these ashpatos, which are places that attract shrotzim. And the shrotzim eventually die. This will be mar betuma, and it'll be metame the kodshim in Yerushalayim, or maybe even just the city itself of Yerushalayim that has kedusha. Now we go on to the seventh din that sets up Yerushalayim as a unique place. And this I call the din of Yofi Shal Yerushalayim. We have to maintain Yerushalayim as a place of beauty. And again, I thought that in the case of Ashpasos, which we discussed earlier, perhaps that would be a justification for sending the Ashpatos out of Yerushalayim, because we want to maintain the beauty of Yerushalayim, the cleanliness of Yerushalayim. So send the Ashpatos out of Yerushalayim. So I'm not sure why the Gemara doesn't offer that explanation about Ashpatos. But at least as far as kivshonos are concerned, and these kivshonos are furnaces that we used back in the day to prepare sid, which is plaster for building, or the pottery that they used to subject to furnaces in order to take the clay and heat it up at tremendously high temperatures. But all this, which engenders a smoke and a bad odor, should be avoided, and that's what we say, Mishum Kutra. Kutra is the smoke that goes up from the chimneys of these furnaces, and that smoke, of course, undermines the yofi of the city. First of all, blackens the walls of the city, but even beyond that, who wants to live in a place where the ashan, the smoke, is just wherever you turn? And these kivshonos and these furnaces are a tremendous source of ashan, of dust entering into the atmosphere. I would almost say it's a halacha in Yerushalayim that we have to be even more makpid on pollution than we would outside Yerushalayim. And that leads us to the eighth takara, which is very similar to numbers 6 and 7, and perhaps even 5, 6, and 7. And that is Ein Osim Ba Ginos Upardesim. Ginos are gardens, pardesim, also a type of a garden usually used as for a vineyard. Now, what's the problem with these ginos? I mean, offhand, you would have said either of them. You know, we want as many public gardens and parks as we can. But the answer is mishum sircha. Sircha means it's fashtonkin, meaning it's a reach ra, it has a bad odor. Why does it have a bad odor? Because now, what is the source of these? Of this sirachon, this very bad odor that's engendered by the ginos? And the answer seems to be that you have in these ginos and pardesim all sorts of growing vegetables, fruits, grapes, whatever it might be. And what happens is that sometimes you have asovim roim. You have bad asev and so forth and so on that grow in these ginos and these pardesim, and they rip them out and they throw them outside of their dalet amos, so to speak. And that's going to cause a reach ra in the entire area, in the entire radius. And Yerushalayim is called in Tehillim, we mentioned it today in the Shir Shel Yom, Yefei Nof Misos Kol Haaretz. Again, it's got to be a place of beauty, but also a place of joy and happiness. That's based on the Pasuk Yefei Nof. Perhaps this concept of Yofi, and to avoid the Sirachon of the Ginos, of the Asovim that were removed, we can refer to the concept of Simcha and Tainug. The concept of Yefei Nof and the Yofi of Yerushalayim means something that the people can feel. It's not only just, let's look at the objective beauty. Maybe Ginos and Pardes would actually enhance the beauty, the landscaping of Yerushalayim. But what we're focused on is the people, the Anshei Yerushalayim. They have to experience and encounter Yerushalayim as a Yefei Nof. And Mesos Kolor, it's Mesos meaning Miloshon Sosa Mesimcha, perhaps. Which means that what's antithetical to the oneg that one should enjoy in Yerushalayim is tsar, obviously, and any sort of foul odor that pollutes the atmosphere of Yerushalayim will create tsar on behalf of the Anshei Yerushalayim. And considering the fact that there are so many osei mitzvos that converge on Yerushalayim, for example, to be makriv korbanos, they come in front of the Sanhedrin and present you know, the vacillations, they're confused. There's so many mitzvot that are fulfilled in Yerushalayim. I can go on and on and on. And in Zeraim, I mean, you can talk about Bikurim, talk about so many large multitudes of people, of Jews coming to converge on Yerushalayim for various reasons. As we mentioned before, Karbanos, Aliyah LeRegel, reflecting and presenting their Sfeikos and Halacha to the Chachmei Sanhedrin and other mitzvahs that they're involved in. And because we have to have a special respect for Osei HaMitzvos, therefore we have to have a special respect and admiration for the Anshei Yerushalayim. And that's perhaps what the Gemara means when it says that Einosim ba kivshonos mishum kutcher, now Einosim ba ginos pardes mishum sircha sirachon. All this is to guarantee that the person who's living in that particular location would be able to enjoy Yerushalayim and not be depressed by black smoke, not be upset by the smell of rotten fruits, these elements which be offensive to the Anshei Yerushalayim, causing tsar instead of sason vioneg. Those have to be avoided, those have to be omitted from the atmosphere of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is a yeshiva shel tainug, a yeshiva of nachas ruach. Again, as we said before, in Yerushalayim, we need a kiyum of Re'uyol Yofi, as we saw in the pasuk in Tehillim Memches Yifei Nof Misos Kol Haaretz. Now we get down to numbers 9 and 10. Ein Megadlin Ba Tarnagolim Mishum Kodshim. Tarnagolim have a tendency of going into the Ashpa, and in so doing, they come in contact with Shrotzim, and that's going to create a chashash that they will bring some of that, those Shrotzim that are in their mouth, and place them, who knows where in Yerushalayim, but in different places where they'll be Metami, the Kodshim of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim requires a great deal of sanctity, of purity, and Yerushalayim is antithetic to Tumah, because Kodshim has to be brought to the Beis HaMikdash, has to be the purest and the holiest of them all. So to avoid that, we're going to add this din of Ein Megadlin Ba Tarnagolim, because Tarnagolim are the ones that are going to bring this, you know, they're pecking away the Shrotzim and the Ashpos, and that has to be avoided at all costs. Now, the strange thing is that we've just established that there are no Ashpasos in Yerushalayim, but the answer is there are Ashpasos adjacent to Yerushalayim, out of the bounds of Yerushalayim, and there are Shrotzim there too. And therefore, with regard to the Tarnagolim, we gotta avoid any contact between the Tarnagolim and the Shrotzim if the Tarnagolim are moving around Yerushalayim, because that's going to be Metamei Kodshim. Again, what we're going to have to assume here is that there are Tarnagolim that are going Chutz Yerushalayim, and there they're going to be Menaker B'Ashposos. And yet it's very strange, because take a look now at the 10th and the final halacha that singles out Yerushalayim, Ein Malinin Ba Es Hames. And the Gemara says Gemara. Gemara means that there's a transmission and a tradition that was passed from generation to generation. That transmission was that you're not allowed to leave the dead corpse overnight in Yerushalayim. And the question that we raised earlier, if you remember, is why should this Isra Alonis HaMes be limited or reflect the special sanctity of Yerushalayim? It's a general Alochei Malinim Ba'as HaMes and applies even outside of the framework of Yerushalayim. This Ein Malinim Ba'as HaMes is a universal Alochei that's not predicated on Yerushalayim. in any way. And I heard once that the Chevra Kaddish in Yerushalayim, even to this very day, is very makpid not to wait till the next morning, even with regard to those the niftarim that are brought by airplane from Chutz Laretz. In other words, it seems that it's not a din in Hilchas Kfura Yerushalayim, the relationship between Yerushalayim and the mitzvah of Kfura, because if it was a din in Yerushalayim as far as Kfura, it would only apply to Anshei Yerushalayim. We've seen many different takanas that reflect the Anshei Yerushalayim and the special mitzvahs that they have. You might say that they have a special mitzvah of Kfura, but that's really not so, because if that be the case, if a body comes from out of Yerushalayim, a corpse, to be buried in Yerushalayim, then the law would be that there's no chiyuv kvura of Anshei Yerushalayim vis-a-vis someone who's an alien who doesn't live in Yerushalayim. Why would therefore there be a problem of halonas hames? Like, for example, in our contemporary times, you have it used to be El Al, maybe it's not El Al anymore, that brings dead bodies of Jews to Eretz Yisrael for burial. And that burial would have to take place immediately without postponing it till the next day. The answer is because we're not talking about a din of Anshei Yerushalayim in the midst of Kvura. What we're really talking about is Kedushas Yerushalayim. And the presence of a corpse in Yerushalayim is antithetical to Yerushalayim itself. It's a pegia, if you will, in the Kedusha of Yerushalayim. And all this is a result of Misa and Linas Hames, to delay the burial, again, on every split second, is being pogea in the Kedusha of Yerushalayim. Because that Kedusha, that special unique Kedusha of Yerushalayim, is antithetical to Tumah. And we saw already before how we have to do everything in our power to limit Tumah. Here, in the case of Yerushalayim, we say, Ein Malina Bas Hames. The very moment you delay the burial, then the mess itself, it undermines the status of Yerushalayim, because you cannot have both Kedusha and Tara on the one hand and Tum on the other hand. Pinpoint what undermines the Kedusha of Yerushalayim and its Tara, and that is the Shehiyah, the delaying and the postponing, the holding on to the dead body before its burial. Like it's like the case of a Nazir, as Kedushas HaGavra, and now he's in a Beis HaKfaros. Get out of there as soon as you possibly can. There's an Issur Shehiyah. Here too, there's an Issur Shehiyah of Tumah in the case of Halonas Hames. The Halonas Hames itself engenders a situation of an extended period of time of Tumah by virtue of the Metzius, the reality that the mess is here in Yerushalayim. So this Issur Shehiyah that we saw in the case of a Nazir is carried over to Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim doesn't tolerate the protracted Tumah as a result of delaying the burial. And if you take a look carefully in Rashi Dimaraskal, a malinin ba'as hames, Rashi adds a few words at the end. Take a look, he says, Kovrin oso miyad. It could be that outside of the bounds of Yerushalayim, that means in the balance of Eretz Yisrael, we also have to be very careful about burying the dead and not postponing it. But yet I wouldn't say that there's halacha of miyad. There's halacha not to postpone the burial. And certainly we don't want to postpone it from one day, meaning the day of the death, to the next day, if we could avoid that. But be that as it may, there's no din of miyad until we get to Yerushalayim. And there it's Ein Malinin Bas Hames Ela Kovreu Miyad. That's how Rashi, I think, would interpret this Gemara. And I wanted to add one last point over here. Many of us here in Yerushalayim, contemporary Yerushalayim, know and experience this, that the time period between the Misa and the Kfura is a very short period of time. In the case of my mother, may she rest in peace, the Chevra Kadisha of Yerushalayim buried her at 12 noon. She died in Shari Tzedek Hospital at 9 in the morning, just the same day, 3 hours later. All to avoid the halonas hames, but rather lekovro, as Rashi says, miyad. And I remember the case of my father, who was buried at night by the Chevra Kadisha because they weren't going to tolerate any linas lila in the case of a mess. With regard to other cities in Eretz Yisrael, all the locations in Eretz Yisrael, there is no isur per se of halonas hames. There's a chiv kfura, and that chiv kfura should be tended to as soon as possible, but that's all a reflection of covered hames. Whereas here in Ein Malinim Bo Es Hames, that has nothing to do with covered hames, it has to do with the covered of Yerushalayim. In the case of covered hames outside Yerushalayim, there I would say that, again, there should be the unnecessary postponement to the kfura should be absolutely forbidden. But on the other hand, to postpone the kfura, for example, because some relatives are coming in from out of town, if you know what I mean, they're flying in from America to Israel with an LL plane, in that case, for sure, if the Iser HaLonas HaMes in the case of Chutz L'Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael is a result of Kvod HaMes, then Ein Hachinami, if you have a reason to postpone the kvura, and that reason is also the Kvod HaMes, because more people will join to the Levaya, then there's no strict Iser. However, that's not going to happen in the Chevra Kadisha here in Yerushalayim. They want to get the mess buried as soon as possible, because otherwise the mess and his presence in Yerushalayim is a continuous shahia of Pegiyah, undermining the Kedushas Yerushalayim, and that's what Tumah is all about. We got to get the dead buried as soon as possible. So those are the 10 unique halachas that are singled out for Yerushalayim and only Yerushalayim. Now at this point in the sugya, the Gemara is going to go back to the Mishnah on Daf Ayites Amid Beis and try to understand it. What is the underlying reason that, shall we say, compelled as such, we cannot postpone the burial of the dead? No way, no how. And even if you'll tell me, well, we'll enhance the covered hames, that's not relevant here, because this requirement of Ein Malinin Es Hames B'Yerushalayim is not a reflection of covered hames. No. If it were, we'd be talking about the whole globe. But rather, it's a halacha in which the tumah in Yerushalayim of Misa has to be done away with, so to speak, as soon as possible through kvura. But it's a halacha where the tumah is antithetical to Yerushalayim. Okay, Rabosai, we'll stop here. What we want to talk about tomorrow is the Ein Megadlin Chazirin, and based on the story in the long Brisa here, and then we're going to try to get to a more Levitic Sugya. Imir Tzashem, we'll do that tomorrow.